I run the family business.
I run the family.
Florida politics is my playground.
I walked away from it all in favor of the politics of the playground.
Neither of us suffers from a lack of opinions.
This is
He Said,
She Said. Welcome to the latest edition of He Said, She Said.
With Ella.
I think it's safe to call this our first official summer edition. As you can hear, Ella is not in summer camp, in school.
It's always good to have our little Ella Biscuit with us. She's probably our not only our favorite guest, she's probably our most popular guest.
I think she's the most popular Shorsh for sure.
Oh, that's absolutely true. It is kind of the first. I know, like, we've been out since Memorial Day and everything like that, but it just feels like the first week where it's summer. It's super hot outside, number one. It's hot everywhere. I get that. But also, the legislative session is now in for a landing. The budget's signed. All the main bills are signed. There's, you know, we've gone for almost 6 weeks with bill signings and the trip to Israel. And so everything, and I also on the calendar, and we'll talk about it, like the debates were another checkpoint. So I think like there's actually a moment to breathe now for
Moment to breathe. I don't know what you're talking about. There's no moment to breathe for me. We're getting ready to go to Europe for 3 weeks. How do you think I'm breathing?
It goes from my court to your court now. It's the Michelle show.
It is the Michelle show. Thank God for our travel agent, because we wouldn't be pulling off this trip also without her good help, because it's just a lot of moving pieces. It's weird to me that somehow we have more moving parts to this trip than we did on our month-long transatlantic cruise bounce all over Europe. But I think we've just booked a lot more experiences.
Shout out to Airbnb.
Airbnb experiences.
Which we really like.
Is really awesome. And we found Airbnb experiences through Allie and Chris Schoonover.
And it's a way where you can do something, I don't want to say touristy, but you can do something cool without being part of like a 12-person minivan.
Well, no,
slow tour guide thing.
They sell them as groups, but you also have the choice to buy them privately.
I just feel like,
we bought everything privately because I don't want seven other people making espadrilles with us.
Right.
Ella would not enjoy that. It's
well,
gotta be private.
I guess it's more like it's a little bit more off the beaten path. I don't feel like you're just getting dumped at the market and getting, you know, you're not getting dumped at the market and there's all the touristy stores and everything like that. I feel like.
Yeah, like one night in Barcelona, we're doing a tasting experience. It's literally three friends that take us to five of their favorite tapas places that they go to on their Friday nights. That's exactly what you want out of a food experience, right, babe?
Well, not only do I want it, I want to do it in St. Pete. I want us to start
Yeah, you want us to start selling these Airbnb experiences in St. Pete.
You get to come Friday night happy hour experiences with us and with Ella, and we'll take you to the Vinoy. We'll order the sushi like we do.
You know what? Thinking about that, and then we'll take you on our boat and give you the waterside tour.
Right.
And so shout out to the Xanders for the really thoughtful edible arrangement, which I'm a giant fan of edible arrangements that they sent us.
I don't know
how
they knew that, by the way. That was
for our first Airbnb experiences tour we provided for them when they were in the Berg.
I'm telling you, if we take what we did with the Xanders and we just put that out there.
I don't want to hang out with people I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, there's that. But we're a little crazy getting ready for vacation. We'll get there on time. We'll be relaxed. It's fine.
Well, we get kind of a everybody does, you know, a nice little break when you have July 4th on a Thursday. That means everybody gets off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we've got that going into.
I don't know what world you live in that you think everybody gets off 2 days for 4th of July.
How do they not get off 2 days?
Have you worked in corporate America?
No.
Exactly.
You. So people go back to work the day after July 4th?
Some companies make you go back. There are some people who work on 4th of July.
I understand that. I get that there's, you know, obviously hospitality industry, et cetera. But if you are in the professional world.
No, a lot of places make you go back. I bet you if you asked my mom what the law firm is doing, I bet you they don't have Friday off.
That's anti-American.
4th of July is 4th of July. It's not July 5th.
Yeah, but it should be a whole weekend to celebrate our, you know, if President
That's
Trump
why
had
a lot of places
way,
did their fireworks yesterday.
Who did their fireworks yesterday?
Idlewild Baptist Church in Tampa had their big 4th of July fireworks display yesterday.
How big can that fireworks display
be? Do you know how big that church is?
No, no.
It's, I think, the largest church. It's the church where we
have... Oh, that's the church where Jamie Grant and them...
And that's the church where they have fallen police officer funerals because it's the only one large enough in Tampa.
No, I can't make fun of it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, see?
All right, so we're doing vacation prep. We're going to get to that. We are... The second half of this podcast is going to be the long-awaited kind of like first part of some Disney cruise.
You know, everybody's probably going, I thought that we've been getting Disney cruise from you all along. Right. What do you mean this is a new one? All you guys do is talk about Disney and Disney cruises. Speaking of, I can't wait to get to Disney later today.
We are popping over to Disney. I'm on a panel.
Yeah, Peter's going to work, and Ella and I said, wait, you're going to Orlando for work? We're tagging along, and we'll hang out at the Disney pool.
By the way, I was going to tell you, I may tape that, like, the pre-part of it with Matt and Anna and
whatever you want,
maybe
darling.
throw that on a podcast. Jason Garcia, myself, are at the Orlando. Everybody will have seen it, but it should be no one will have seen it by the time this comes out. But it should be an interesting happy hour presentation.
I want to broach an important topic with you. I have a very important new Shorsh family rule.
Okay, what's that?
You are never allowed to ever be in a separate city from me on a political debate night. Ever again. I cannot watch a debate without you. It's no fun. Who's going to make fun of the presidential candidates with me? Who is going to appreciate
it's
my
kind of how
witty
we started
observations?
Off too, right? Isn't it how we started off in 20...
I mean, we used to get Beauregard stuffed elephants for Republican debate night. And we used to get them stuffed donkeys for Democratic debate night. This is long before... We
used to cheese board it up.
We did.
That was...
Remember that one time we had Troy Kinsey over at the condo watching a presidential debate?
God, I don't remember. I do remember that now, but I would not have remembered that had you not said that.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, going forward, it's a new rule. I did not like that you were in Miami covering the debates while I was in the Berg.
Were you pregnant during... And you would always fall asleep. Remember, didn't you fall asleep at Amanda's house?
That was always during Olympics.
You absolutely fell asleep during the Olympics, but I also think it was during the... I think we watched some of the presidential debates over there as well.
I don't know.
And you would... A shout out to our friends. You know they're going to listen to the podcast because they're... Amanda and Derek Houston are going to Montana. It seems like everybody is in Montana right now. I just saw a Facebook post and got a message from Paul and Sally Bradshaw. They're out there. I see a lot of people out. I know why they're out there. It's because it's not 100 degrees during the day there, but Amanda and Derek are going to be there, and so we miss them. They're on there. It's kind of weird not having our besties with us for...
They're cheating on us for the 4th of July. It's, right. I think the first time ever. I don't know of a 4th of July we've celebrated without them. Well, so I'm glad. I hope they have fun in Montana, but thanks for breaking tradition.
And I know Ella's not going to want to hear about this, but we are in love with that with Baby Sutton, who is Reggie Cardoza and Stephanie McClung, their baby, beautiful baby boy. We may have snuck over there a couple times to give him some extra attention because he's just awesome.
Yeah, he is really awesome. I'm really thrilled that we get to be
because, you know,
his honorary aunts and uncles. It's so nice to have a new blessing around to just make you really appreciate what matters in the world.
Okay, so let's go to the debate.
Since you weren't with me to talk about the debate during the debate, let's talk about it now. We haven't talked about it at all.
No, we've yeah.
We decided we'd save it all for right now. So here we go. Here are our original takes.
It was
just kidding, by the way. We did talk about it.
It was so I went down for it. Let me start off by saying again, Miami is my least favorite city in the world. I would rather be in the mountain slums of a South American megapolis than be in Miami. I know that Miami is gorgeous. I get that there's, you know, beautiful people and food and so forth, but it is just so it's just so invariably hot. It is so crowded, and it is just, it's just so different than any place else in the United States, and not in positive ways. Traffic is just atrocious. People move at a different unnatural pace there. And it's just like my least favorite city. It's really why we don't have a reporter down there, is because I draw the line on Florida at Alligator Alley, and I just let people like Mark Caputo and all that just kind of have Miami. I don't want
politics in Miami is an entirely different beast too, and it's just something different than what we cover. I don't want to say that there's a lot more corruption down there, but I guess I just said that. So
there are in the outskirts. It's not fun. I get it where it's fun for other people. I can see it, but it's just like, you just feel like everybody's on coke. I mean, that's just the bottom line. You feel like everybody's on coke there. And I'm probably not wrong. So I was down there. I was at the JW Marquee, which was close. It took like an hour and a half to get from there to the debate center. It was a reminder, the debate center, when you got there, how much interest there is in the debates. There were several hundred press corps people or press corps people and TV camera people, et cetera. It felt like a Hollywood premiere when the candidates were coming in. Bernie Sanders was the one candidate that I got close to. And yes, he was basically a smelly old man. He is exactly the cantankerous old yelling man in person. He was kind of rude to a couple of reporters that asked him questions. I was at a reception beforehand that the Democratic Party put on. That was nice. I thought it was a good moment for Florida Democrats that they got to raise some money from that. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, they really got to show how important they are, and pulling off two nights of debates.
Well,
in
that's
Florida
my...
is quite incredible, and it was a great crowd. I mean, I know Rachel Maddow kind of joked about the fact that the crowd ignored the recommendation to be quiet. Thank goodness the crowd ignored the recommendations to be quiet and not react. Like, that's what you want at a debate. So
let me start there.
Good
that was
job
my...
on filling the audience by all the campaigns and the Florida Democratic Party.
I thought NBC News did a pretty poor job across the board. I thought the idea of having 5, 6, 7 moderators or whatever was just too much.
It was too much when you had so many candidates already. So there's already 10 people on the debate stage that you're having to manage, but 20 people over the course of both nights. And you throw in 5 moderators. I mean, it's just hard to keep track of who the hell is talking when.
I didn't like it. Chuck Todd was at, I'm a big Chuck Todd fan, but he was at his Chuck Todd worst, and he came off. A lot of people said he was the biggest loser of the debate, of the debates, that he came off very toadish, unfortunately.
I wanted to see Joy Reid.
Joy Reid in Miami should have been.
She's from Miami. She knows Florida. She's someone who should have been down there. She should have been the Miami person.
Well,
that
I think
they sent down, not that, Chuck Todd. I know that Chuck's always talking about the U, but I think Joy Reid would have been better and more of the moment.
Well, I think that that's an important point to remind people. You know, it goes back to the last year, the Republican gubernatorial debate. And you would have thought, because it was the Fox News one, you would have thought because it's a gubernatorial debate, they were going to talk, Florida policy and everything like that. And when you have a national news company running a debate, they're broadcasting it to their audience, and their audience doesn't care about the transportation bill. And so just as that debate had they talked about national stuff, even though it was a gubernatorial race, just because these debates were held in Miami, they were not Florida-centric at all. It was very interesting. I thought there were very few questions about Florida. It was not for a Florida audience. And then second, I thought it was interesting, and I think Marco Rubio was the one who pointed it out. There were no questions about Venezuela, about Cuba, about Latin America. And if it's not going to be asked in Miami, when are those questions going to be asked?
But is a voter in Iowa voting based on those things? They're not. And this was the first presidential
primary debate. They are the foreign policy questions of this time.
But this was the first debate where people were getting to know all 20 of these candidates. There was just too many candidates to dive into stuff like that. They had to do the broad stroke issues. I'm sorry to disagree with you on this one, but they had to do the stuff that mattered to middle America, not to just Floridians. It wasn't a Florida debate. It was a meet all the Democratic candidates. By the way, have you ever heard of that guy who's not wearing a necktie?
I had, just because he's a tech guy. And so I knew who he was. I honestly had not heard of your favorite candidate, but I don't want to give that away yet, because I want to make another take, which is night two was so interesting. I don't even remember night one at this point. Like, it was.
Listen, can I be honest with you?
You didn't watch night one.
I had zero interest in night one.
Right.
I'm not watching an undercard debate. I'm sorry. And that's what it was. Elizabeth Warren was really robbed. She should have been on the debate stage on Thursday night. She should have had the chance to be up there debate. She should have been there with all the other top tier candidates. And instead, she's down there debating people who aren't even, they have no hope of being in on the ballot.
The Democratic Party is in an impossible situation. How you are fair to all of these people. They put these, hey, getting 65,000 donors. That's a significant threshold.
I hear you, but it should have been decided. All right, these are the top. These are the people that are polling in the top 10. You get this debate. The bottom 10, you're in the other debate. Elizabeth Warren should have been up there debating. Imagine what the stories would be if we'd got to hear Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and the
Who's
angry
Kamala?
Old man. That's her name.
I know. You and I go back and forth on this.
I was listening to her husband.
I know.
At Leadership Blue.
Know.
Clearly you weren't.
I know. I'm like, who's Kamala?
But I mean, imagine what a different debate we would have had.
I don't think that would have been good for
it wouldn't have been,
Kamala Harris. It would
right,
have been.
I understand. But
I like the idea that it was kind of a semifinals that we're, hey, listen, when the NCAA 64 gets together, sometimes Duke has got an easy road to the Final Four. Sometimes it doesn't. And the team that comes out battling, you know, three top teams as opposed to an easier draw, you know, it changes the dynamic. So all I'm saying is like, so I think like Julian Castro is who they thought performed the best or second best from the night one. And maybe Cory Booker. And I don't think anybody remembers that debate at this point. I think everybody.
And I think people were saying Julian Castro had a great night because he had the best strategy, which was take out Beto.
All right. So let's start. Is that a good play? Not start there, but is that are we locked in there? Like Beto of the big time people.
It's time to go.
Is it time for Beto to go?
I think so. I mean, he didn't have a good debate performance and he didn't, you know. He got taken apart by Castro. I think that, yeah, it's time for Beto to go. You should have been running for the Senate again, not for President of the United States.
It'll be interesting to see how much his money tightens up. And that'll be, you know, it's not only him, Amy Klobuchar. I mean,
who?
Yeah. And that's a state. I mean, Kirsten Gillibrand.
Kirsten Gillibrand.
She's got, I mean, these people.
That's the thing. I wanted to like her.
You're right.
I mean,
so did I.
I really wanted to like her. I kept looking for moments in the debate to like Gillibrand, and it wasn't there for me. She didn't connect. And she had to be, and again, I hate to say this about a woman because I feel like we only comment on this on women. We don't comment on it on men. She had to be a little extra aggressive in order to get any meaningful speaking time during that debate. And she had to blatantly ignore some of the rules from the moderators and just talk over them to get her point across because she wasn't getting it. But at the end of the day, I don't think she had enough. There were moments that I liked her, but she's not going to do it. She's not going to take out Elizabeth Warren. She's not going to take out Joe Biden. She's not going to take out Kamala Harris.
Yeah. I guess at this point it becomes a matter of budget. It's like, how do you keep the lights on? How do you travel to Iowa? How do you travel to New Hampshire? So somebody,
I mean, donors had to have looked at those debates and they have to start making decisions now.
Well, and like in the big time ones,
that's what I mean. The big time ones.
No, I'm saying like there's even people making decisions like about Biden, like where there's a big San Fran tech guy. And I don't remember who had donated $250,000, I think. And is like, I'm just going to put it on hold right now. You know, clearly the inevitability is gone. I don't know.
Because let's be honest, out of everyone, Biden had the worst debate performance.
It's not only that he had
because he had the most to lose out of anyone going in. So he had to be pitch perfect in order for this not to be a bad night for him. Debate night is always terrible for the front runner. because you have nothing to gain
right.
from a debate. You have everything to lose. Well,
that's why he's been unavailable to the media. You know, that's why he's not answering. There's like the New York Times had 18 questions for the 20 candidates and he didn't participate in that. I wonder, like, all right, so as much as Joe Biden is running in a McCain-ish, you know, one more time for the country, imagine if he went the opposite way right now and somebody went to him and said, listen, you might be able to win this. There's probably still a 15 to 25% chance that you could win this. But the Democratic Party, the only way it sustains itself for the next 25 years is if all these new voices get to bubble up. You are a great man, but you are the one that's going to keep the bubble up. You will distract from the rest of the race. Imagine if his last main magnanimous act was, I'm clearly not where the party is going. I'm out. And he left it to the scrum between Warren, Kamala.
He can't do that. I'm not with you on that because I still believe he's the best hope to beat Donald Trump. So he can't turn away from the party. And think about all the people who are working on his campaign, who took jobs on his campaign.
Right.
Who have been with him and believed in him and how screwed they would be because there's not going to be equal spots for them on Warren or Harris. No, I'm sorry. I'm not there with you.
I know. I'm not saying that it's something he's going to do. I'm saying that it would almost be patriotic to his party that he loves if he did that, if he cleared the way. So, all right. Who was your favorite candidate?
I didn't have a favorite candidate.
Was there anybody? Wait, you're the new Democrat. Like, if you were voting today,
if I had to cast my ballot today,
they're going to poll you.
If I had to cast my ballot today, it would be for Kamala Harris. She delivered.
Can we get you on the podcast record? Do we need to go back to the podcast archives where I was touting her?
Was she
my number one?
She was your number one.
Out of the gate, I think she was my number
one.
And
I said that I wasn't sure.
All of our predicted money, by the way, is on Kamala, so.
I did not know that, but I told you it started. This is ridiculous. It started because Ella and I really enjoyed her children's book. Then I really enjoyed her husband's speech at Leadership Blue. I think that he made a really good argument for his wife. I really enjoy their relationship. I like the way they are working together on social media and going around the country. I like the way they make their case together. As much as I love Mayor Pete, I don't think he's it for me at the moment. Kamala had a better debate performance than Mayor Pete did. Mayor Pete had a good debate performance, but Kamala had a great debate performance, and the latest polling data shows that she's climbed 5 points. So I'm not the only one who feels that way. So at the moment, my dream Democratic ticket is a Harris, and I'm going to screw up Mayor Pete's last name. So Buddha, whatever.
Mayor Pete.
Harris, Mayor Pete. Harris president, Mayor Pete VP is my current dream ticket.
Okay, so I'm going to shoot that down and say that would be too much too quickly.
Absolutely, it would be too much too quickly.
Moderate,
a black woman and a gay man? I mean, this country's head would explode, it would be amazing.
But so go back to Kamala and go back to your previous point about you still think Biden is the number one threat to Trump. I do think, and I've thought it is Kamala because I feel like, all right, so we've got two things going on in the Democratic Party. You've got electability, you know,
which everyone says is
their, Biden.
And is their number one issue.
And then you've got the progressive movement that's happening with AOC, et cetera. Kamala Harris is not going to, I think she straddles both of those worlds better than anybody. She's got electability. And you're like, wait a second. There's no way this country would go for a black woman now with Trump and all. And I'm like, no, that's kind of exactly.
Because the African-American vote is going to turn out for her.
It would give women.
And they didn't turn out for Hillary.
It would give women the second bite at the apple that so many women, regret not getting out there for Hillary. It would get.
I think that you can't count on the women vote. I still think that suburban white women would betray Kamala Harris just like they did Hillary Clinton and not turn out or vote for Donald Trump over her. I really think that for Kamala, it's she's going to turn out the African-American vote the same way that Barack Obama did.
I think that she builds. I think she's got the best chance of rebuilding the Obama coalition. Of,
I agree.
Upper intellectual whites, college educated whites, young people. You know, she there will be the argument. And I also think on the electability, I think you have to add in who is going to be the person that will best debate Donald Trump three times and will do the best there. And think about how she filleted Joe Biden. Can you imagine?
I can't wait to see her do it to Donald Trump.
Right.
It would be amazing. And that's the thing for me. I want to like Joe Biden and I really like what he represents. But for me, the debate highlighted he represents the past and it's time to move on. And he really was kind of a fumbling old man on that debate stage.
He looked
old. He sounded old. I didn't see any fire, and it was really upsetting to me.
I'm very ageist.
I had a hard time because I rewatched the debate with friends who are close to Biden, and they could not see what we saw. And I get it. I've had rose-colored glasses about a candidate, too, but it's
I'm a huge ageist. I've told you before that I think everybody should—
Stop. Our daughter's in the room.
Should basically
no one needs to hear that. No one needs to hear that. 75.
I think that, and I don't understand people.
Don't agree with you remotely.
I don't understand people who are in their 70s.
Ella's making a total stink face
and not on a
beach.
Like, that is just, like, I don't get that. I value experience, and I think that there is a role for all of that. But the idea of being 76 years old and wanting elective office, like, when I saw Rumsfeld and what he did with the Pentagon, at his advanced age, and I see these people, and I just, it never works out well. It never does, and people think that it does, but it's too old.
I feel like Joe Biden spent more time defending Barack Obama's legacy than he spent explaining what legacy he would create as president of the United States himself, and that was the problem for me. I get that part of, you know, a big part of Biden is what was done in the Obama administration, but you just can't be focused on that and get my vote, buddy. I'm sorry.
And you know what's also interesting is I always think, if I remember correctly, Biden was against a lot of things internally. I mean, he was definitely the number one cheerleader, but he was against the Osama bin Laden raid. And I wonder, so I don't know. There's just, I've seen like David Axelrod's like tweets.
And again,
alluding Kamala, to how they may not have been as close as we made it out.
Yeah, that's true. But, and Kamala took him to task for a lot of the things I had been saying to you. Like, he is a problematic candidate for Black voters. And I think that that is just the first wave in many waves. And don't put it past
the
campaign team. They will be sending mail into African-American voters highlighting every bad thing Joe Biden ever did if Biden is the candidate.
I
don't agree. Like, listen, I'm fine with people having an evolution in policy because we all have had an evolution. Anyone who's been in public service as long as Joe Biden has should hopefully have an evolution, because look at how far this country has come and moved since he first started serving in office. So I'm not really a big believer in punishing people for giving a eulogy for a colleague that they served with in the Senate.
I just think that, and I get the issues about he's going to be tough for, especially like on the busing issue. And going back to age, if you look at Trump's answer on busing, like, he literally thinks it's like a busing, like not busing, like forced integration, but like just like getting on a bus. You know, it's going to be funny, as you're saying it, it's going to be really interesting this next month before the second debate. What is going to come out about Kamala Harris?
Well, already the racist attacks are starting.
Yeah, I'm talking more like the
I mean, which Trump son?
It was Don Jr.
Yeah, I can never remember which hate-filled child of his thing.
I knew that was going to come. I'm talking more from the left, because she's never been embraced by the left because of her tough prosecutorial career.
And that's part of why a moderate woman like me likes her. I don't have a problem with her tough prosecutorial career.
But with that is going to be the big oppo dump from there's and how and many reporters
forget, you're right
how many reporters descended on Sacramento
while
and San
she
Francisco.
Had a great night. She's going to have a tough month, because once you elevate yourself to top tier status, you do get scrutinized more.
And she's gonna, and I it will be interesting to see if she is ready for that. I know that they've brought in $2 million post-debate. I know that she's up in the poll 6 points.
I donated.
Did you really?
Absolutely. That night.
Really?
Yeah. Not big. It was a $25 donation. It was a...
Now you're on the small donor list now. I mean, they're going to rent that and sell that for
I'm on the small donor list for Mayor Pete, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris now.
Got it.
Yeah. I like to add to their small donor numbers. I'll donate more as we get closer and if I really believe in someone. But for now, I like to donate small amounts when I like moments candidates have. It's just my way of saying good job.
It's
because I remember being that person fundraising off of a debate and the goals that you had.
Right.
And, you know, being the person who was in charge of getting small donor donations in. And you just are like looking at the ticker board, making sure that how far am I away? So it wasn't really for Kamala. It was for whatever lower level staffer was in charge of the email campaign.
You know, this is as we're talking about.
By the way,
this,
I will say that the social media strategy was excellent by the candidates throughout that debate.
The thing that's going to kill us on this podcast is it's going to be Democratic debates all the time. And it's like, you know, this is what was going on in 2016 for me as running the website was. It was all the news was about about Trump and the Republican presidential field. I mean, Hillary was inevitable and wasn't really a press friendly candidate.
Right.
There wasn't like, of course, Bill Nelson was going to endorse her. You know what I mean? So it's like, whereas like, I think Mayor Pete got 3 Florida endorsements the other day. I think from the mayor of Fort Lauderdale was one of them. And that got huge traffic because it got on the Reddit channel for Mayor Pete.
Right.
And I'm just thinking about this podcast. We're just going to continue to do Democratic debate. And our Republican friends are going to be like, oh, my God, if I have to hear about Mayor Pete one more time.
I'm sorry, Republican friends. It just was the debate. If there was a Republican debate, we would be analyzing it just as closely.
Did you watch the president in North Korea? That bizarre whole episode?
I just don't even know what to say about it. I was sick to my stomach.
Why?
I just don't think that he should have crossed in. I think it's a line that the president shouldn't have crossed, and I have a problem with it.
I think the sucking up to Putin was the even more disgusting part of the G20.
The sucking up to Putin, I just can't get. I just don't know how we were still letting this happen. He just looks like such a sycophant, and for such a generally strong, I don't care, leader who, you know, a leader who doesn't care about any of the norms of the presidency. He is just, he's really weak on the world stage.
Okay, so let's close out our debate recap with let's do our, like, kind of our rankings again.
Okay. Where,
all right, your number, we'll just do a contemporary. You're number 3, right? You're number 1. We both agree is
Kamala.
Kamala. Who's your number 2 right now?
Joe Biden's my number 2.
Joe Biden's your number 2. That's who you'd vote for and who you think has the best chance of winning the primary?
Yes, and I might still change my mind. Listen, today I might vote for Kamala. I would vote for Kamala. But a week from now, I could be back to voting for Biden.
All right, so my number 1 is definitely Kamala. Could win, should win. My number 2 should win is Kamala, could win, though, is Elizabeth Warren. Because I just think Biden's going to get, he's going to get eaten up over the next 6 months. There's just, his high water mark was the day he announced. I don't see where this gets better for him. And so it is going to be.
But your own polling numbers show him. He's just.
I don't know that he can hold on to it. I mean, he is.
It's a long way. Jeb Bush, it's a long path to the nomination.
It's Jeb Bush redo. I mean,
I know. Remember, I asked that question of Steve Shale when we had him on before Biden announced. What can Joe Biden do to make sure he's not the Jeb Bush of this election cycle?
Now, we say that, and if he knocks it out of the park at the second debate and holds on, then you've got a scrum going into Iowa and New Hampshire. But I think the calendar is set up for Kamala to do well, with Nevada having a bigger part. You can't, I mean, this is what we saw in the polling with Andrew Gillum. Black people did not know that he was black yet. He was, for a long time, trailing Gwen.
Remember, you have to thread this needle very carefully.
I get it. I get that. But he was trailing Gwen Graham and Philip Levine with black voters. And so there was the idea that where he ended up with black voters was not at anywhere did he start off with. But as he got more earned media and more paid media and was able to communicate just who he was to low information voters, whether they be black or white, black voters were able to come back home. Kamala Harris right now, I think most people are not paying attention to this. Low information voters are not paying attention to this. She has so much room to grow because there's no way that she is going to cede that much of the African-American vote to Joe Biden. And with South Carolina playing such a huge role in the primary, it's like, I think Biden gets beat up in Iowa because Iowa just does that to people. Maybe he rallies back McCainish in New Hampshire. And then they go to South Carolina where, you know, half of the Democratic vote is African-American. And I think that she ends up locking up a huge portion of that. And then you go out to Nevada where, you know, she's going to have a, you know, almost a home field advantage there. I see the timetable lining up very much for her. So I think that Biden doesn't get better. So I think someone else fills that void. There will be a counter to Kamala. And I think that that will be Elizabeth Warren. So that's my number one, number two. And number three is Biden still could win, should win. I think that that's where
I disagree with you on Elizabeth Warren. I think that she has a lot of the same problems that Hillary Clinton has. I think that she is wholly unlikable. And I think that she will have the same problem. I think that moderate female voters will break for Trump over her, just like they did for Trump over Hillary. She's not there for me. So my number three is Mayor Pete. And I know that it's kind of a long shot, but he is performing well. He still has, he has momentum. And I think that for me, that's where I would like to see it go. You know, that ideally that would probably be my number one. I wish I could make him my number one, but I live in the real world. So for me, I have him above Warren.
Okay. All right.
And I know that the polling numbers don't agree with me. I know where Warren is in the polls, but this is about neither one of us is including Bernie Sanders. And, you know, that's just my deal.
Remember how we were talking to Blaze Ignolia about Game Theory Optimum? I think both of us, we're not talking about where the race is going to be. We're talking about where the race
is going to be
in come March. It'll be interesting, though, think about how much fun it'll be for us if, you know, everybody gets a piece of those first four states and stays alive so that you've got Mayor Pete, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala, Biden, somebody else, and somebody else, maybe five or six, and you do get to March 15th in Florida. And it will be very interesting to see if our primary has an impact. All right, that's our debate recap. I think we're kind of off Democratic politics for at least a couple of weeks, especially while we're on this cruise.
I'm totally going to be off Democratic politics. I mean, I know that I'm officially a Democrat, but, you know, I'm still a 50-50 split. So I'm totally going to be off Democratic politics while we're on this cruise, on this vacation, because I've had my fill of them.
All right. Well, that's what we will talk about next. We're going to get Ella Joy set up in the chair and talk all things Disney Cruise.
All right. We're back now that we have Ella all set up. She's going to be joining us in just a couple of moments. Before we get there, I want to thank some of our listeners who took some extra time to engage about the podcast. On our last episode, we really encouraged people to tweet out links to the podcast, share that they liked the podcast. And Skylar Zander is one that I noticed. He tweeted out how much he loved having us on his run, and he shared the link to the podcast. So we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I know Jenna
Bazaka Forrester, who is one of my former colleagues when she wrote for us at Florida Politics, but is now at the Naples Chamber, but is still one of our, she's a good friend, great traveler. And so she had some good tips on Barcelona.
You can find those on our Facebook page because she engaged there and shared some great tips for Barcelona that we're going to implement. I can't wait to go buy some espadrilles at the store that she told us to go check out.
Between her and Gus Corbella, I love that our podcast is basically this great repository for great travel advice.
It is. It is. And then a special thanks to Erin Ballas. She sent us a nice email message saying that she hoped we hadn't already recorded our Disney episode. And she had some questions she wanted us to cover. And that's kind of what inspired us to go ahead and dive deep on all things Disney cruise today.
Well, and that is a great way to put this because, yes, we love Disney cruising. And because we put it out there, I think so many other, I mean, I would say maybe 25 couples, if not more, have come to us with questions about Disney cruising. We see a lot of people that go on it. I could think about Ryan Duffy and his family have asked me a question about it. You know, like Alia Faraz Johnson and Rob Johnson. We talk with them about it. We talk with the Mayor Nicks about it.
Talk with the Bascoms about it,
you know. And
the Cardozos.
People do it. Everybody does it differently. Like, there's everyone people that, like, I love the Bascoms because they love the pool. Like, they crush it at the pool. And
I think we've spent one day maybe total
at the pool and then
on
like,
our 15 cruises.
And then other people, and I'm looking at you now, Ella Joy, some people have their kids get into kids club. And as you shake
Ella, what do you say about kids clubs?
That it takes away time playing with your parents on the cruise, and I just think that the only part that I like about the kids club is that open house, because the parents get to come and I get to experience like the places in the kids club, but not actually have to go without my parents being there.
Because what do you say? What's an important part about vacations for you? It's about family time, about the family being together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to disagree with that.
Well, whenever she says it, just as we're like, we've maybe finally have talked her into going into the kids club. And it's important to note, like, as you can imagine, and it's important for people that are making a decision, the kids clubs are extraordinary. They're helpful.
We're going to talk about them
and so
more later, like, in this episode.
You know, I don't want to dog them, but anytime then she says it, we just kind of give in and
Listen, she's our only child and we're the three amigos. So I don't mind it. I love it. And one day we'll miss it. So,
I mean, she's wearing her Disney cruise dress right now. I mean, it's awesome. She's got, I see Captain Mickey on there and the ships. All right. Where do you want to talk? What do you want to cover today?
Well, I think we kind of will do like our top 10 things we think people should know about a Disney cruise, but really it's 12 things because I had more than 10.
Okay.
So I think that a good place to start is with an overview of all the ships.
What are the four ships, Ella Joyce?
The Magic, the Dream, the Fantasy, and the Wonder.
And which ones have you been on?
The Magic, Dream, the Fantasy.
Okay, right. Very good.
And there's a reason we haven't been on the Wonder. There's kind of the breakdown. So the Magic was the very first ship.
It came over from it was one of the big red boat lines that they...
No, it was not a big red boat ship.
Oh, I thought it was. Thought it was one that they re...
It's a ship that they redid, but it was not a big red boat. It was another cruise line. Disney bought two ships from another cruise line. My dad actually was on the last sailing of the Magic. Whatever the old ship was. I can't remember the name of it. But it was not a big red boat. That's why the boat's not red.
Okay, got it. And so the Magic and the Wonder are, I don't want to say smaller, but...
They are. No, they are the smaller ships. They're the legacy ships. They're more intimate. And the Dream and the Fantasy are the newer ones. The Dream and the Fantasy both are always based out of Port Canaveral. It is part of Disney's contractual agreement with the port.
The Fantasy goes out of Miami.
No, it does not. The Fantasy and the Dream are based out of Port Canaveral. The Wonder sails out of Miami. Yes, I'm correct. I know what I'm talking about, honey.
Okay.
It, the Fantasy sails out of Port Canaveral. It does the 7-day cruises. The Dream does a 3-night and a 4-night.
Okay, in case there was a little gap there, we went offline because I did not believe Michelle, which is a huge mistake, that the Disney Fantasy was based out of Miami. But we quickly went to the Googles, and I was wrong. Yes, the two biggest ships, especially in light of the new arrangements with Port Canaveral.
And that will change with the new arrangements with Port Canaveral. Port Canaveral is getting two of the big ships,
yes,
the new big ships that they're building, and either the Dream or the Fantasy will also be staying at Port Canaveral. So, well, Port Canaveral will go to three ships. So that leaves either the Dream or Fantasy to go somewhere else. And that might go to Miami. We don't know. But Disney does not have a dedicated cruise terminal.
And
at
that's
the
a
port
cool
in Miami.
Thing to bring up about, like, when you do go out of Port Canaveral, not that there's anything wrong with Port Miami or whatever, but it's kind of cool going into that dedicated Disney, you know, port, just with, like, you've got Mickey that's out there, and you've got the, you know, the miniatures and all of the decorations and everything like that. It's just
the whole port itself is Disney themed. You walk through a big mouse head, and they're actual Disney employees helping you in the port. Whereas when you're in Miami, those are not Disney employees. Those are contract employees that work for the Port of Miami.
Got it.
That are working. So it is a different, it's not the full Disney experience.
And so, all right. So I would say the Disney Wonder and Fantasy, there's 9 floors of...
No, the Wonder and Magic.
Wonder and Magic. It's 9 floors of... up to 9 floors, excuse me, of staterooms. And then it goes up, obviously, taller for a couple of the restaurants and the clubs. And then the Fantasy and Dream go up to 11 with a couple more floors. And, you know, it's just for us, like, that size is one of the biggest differences. You can get around the Magic, I think, easier.
Much quicker, right, Ella?
Right.
A little closer to the microphone, kiddo.
Right.
And, like, and for instance, the concierge level, though, on the Dream and the Fantasy, those ships were built with concierge in mind, so all the concierge staterooms are together and by the lounge, whereas on the Magic and Wonder, they're spread out all over the ship on deck 8. So you, like, our room on our upcoming cruise is the farthest it could possibly be from the concierge lounge, so we'll have a hike to get to the concierge lounge. But it's not really a hike because there's no actual, it's not as bad as getting navigating the Dream and the Fantasy.
And now each ship has a character kind of that is at the heart, right, of the ship. I mean, most...
Well, Ella identifies them based on the princesses, right? Ella, talk to us about the ships. Which princesses go with what ships?
So the ships all, the main character on all the ships are the princesses because all the ships are girls. So the princesses that the ship belongs to, I'll tell you why.
Just go ahead. The Magic is who?
Rapunzel. The Dream is Belle. The Fantasy is Frozen. And the
Wonder?
Wonder is Tiana.
Yes. And the Wonder, I will say, even though we haven't sailed on it, the Wonder has some new exciting... It's in its next dry dock. It has some new improvements that are coming to make it more of Tiana's ship. It already has, what's the restaurant on the Wonder? Tiana's Place?
Yes.
Which does dinner. Ella's not a big fan of Tiana, which is why we have not sailed on the Wonder. And she doesn't like the villain in Tiana's movie. So she doesn't like Tiana. He's like a shadow man and he creeps her out and I can't blame her. And the princess turns into a frog. Ella doesn't want to turn into a frog. I get it. But on the Wonder, they are... adding a new family, a new Tiana-themed family lounge. It'll be the first of its kind on any of the Disney cruise ships. So I imagine if it is received well, we should probably expect to see that soon, you know, rolling out in other ships as they go into dry dock. But why did you say the Fantasy was... Who did you call the Fantasy? What ship did you say that was?
Frozen.
And why did you say that was Frozen?
Because I know all the princesses that belong, and all the ships that belong to the princesses.
Is there a Frozen show on the Fantasy?
Yes.
And then why did you call the Dream the Belle ship?
Because there's a Belle show.
It's called Beauty and the Beast live on stage. And then why is the Magic Rapunzel ship?
Because they do, like, this really cool Rapunzel night. Like, there's a Rapunzel show, and, like, there's...
What's like, the restaurant called on the Magic?
Rapunzel's Royal Table.
Which is a dinner theater?
Yeah. And here is a Disney cruise tip that is probably not on the list. And so... You only want to book it, like, the night you get on the ship, because that's when Rapunzel's show is. And on the last night that you have dinner, and well, that you sleep on the ship, because that's where the Rapunzel
show is. We'll get into that. That's called rotational dining.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later.
That's a great point, though.
But that is a great point.
All right, and so the four ships... If you had to go on any one of them, number one would be
Magic.
Right. And now the Magic is also for our friends. Just so you know, like the Magic is the one that gets repositioned to Europe, correct?
Yes. The Magic is the ship that does all the European sailing.
It can maneuver inside of the ports a lot easier, whereas the Fantasy and the Dream are
too large.
They're too large. I think it's also important to point out, like when people are booking on the Dream, all right, number one, the Dream and the Fantasy. I feel like you don't get knocked around as much. We haven't had that issue.
There's
but
less. Peter means there's less motion of the ship. Yes, the ship is longer, so there is less motion. But the Fantasy actually has to move quicker to hit all of the stuff on a 7-day. So I find that you feel more motion sometimes on the Fantasy than you do on the Dream. The Dream travels slower. It doesn't have to go as far. But when you're going to some of like the more southern Bahamian destinations, the Fantasy really has to travel quickly. And so you can feel more of the motion than you would.
I remember that when we went out all the way out to the westward islands, like that first 2 days, we got sick because
that's the only time I ever it was got moving seasick. So quick.
Also, something to consider when picking a cruise ship. So one of the days is almost invariably going to be Castaway Cay,
which is Disney's private island.
When you get onto when you get off of that, the Fantasy and the Dream, and this isn't true on anything like the excursions, getting on and off. Remember, you got probably another 1,000 people and a port, you know, they do a very good job taking care of everybody, but a port can only unload and load up so much. It's a little bit, it's crowded. It's more crowded.
Castaway Cay does get more crowded if you're on the Dream and the Fantasy. If you're on the Wonder or the Magic, it does not. Also, the Magic sails out of New York part of the year. So, and the Magic used to make more appearances at Port Canaveral, but the Magic has not been sailing out of Port Canaveral lately. The Magic sometimes sails out of Miami, and the Wonder sails out of Miami. It sails out of Galveston, Texas. It has been known to do some cruises out of San Diego.
Right.
They have two night cruises. They had a one night cruise. I don't know who would ever book that. I don't advise it. And the Wonder is the ship that does all the Alaskan cruises. And so the Disney Wonder spends the summer in Alaska, which are very popular cruises.
And again, that's another point. So I think this is something to point out. Why do we not do the Alaska ones? And it's not that because I know some friends that have done Alaska ones and they love it. There is an advantage, especially for a lot of people that are listening here. There's nothing better than being able to load up your car and drive and not have to deal with an airline. You're not limited really on luggage and things like that.
Because Peter loves to pack. Peter, how many large full-size suitcases do you think we should take to Europe in addition to all of our carry-ons?
7.
That is, right, Ella? Daddy asked for us to take 7 suitcases. And what did Mommy say?
No.
I said, that's outrageous. We don't need that many, right?
Only 6.
Only 6.
I need a suitcase for my shoes.
That is true. Men's shoes take up a lot of suitcase space, right, Ella?
Yeah.
Well, and also I have my fan. And I have my electrical outlets.
You have your Everpolar.
Yes. My Everpolar.
Because they don't air condition properly in Europe.
And so I have a lot of equipment that I like to bring with me. Yeah. And also, remember, you're for a Disney cruise, and we'll talk about this, there's some costumes and things like that, which, you know, this is definitely not a trip where you're throwing a couple of shirts into an overnight bag and traveling. There may be a pirate outfit. There may be, you know, some the things that go along with that pirate outfit. So... Yes, I do like to. And so there is this advantage of like loading up the car and driving over to it and not having to
Port Canaveral.
To Port Canaveral.
There is a nice advantage to that.
And so that's.
So I agree with you on that. That's part of why. And I think you need to wait till kids are a little bit older than Ella to really enjoy the Alaskan cruise. That's just my personal preference. I know other people have different opinions, but that's just
everything today is just personal preference.
It is. It's just our tips. But and Ella wanted to share some history of the Disney cruise. So she's going to give us a real quick history of Disney Cruise Line.
Okay. So the first ship to set sail was the Magic, then the Wonder, then the Dream, then the Fantasy. And when they built Disney Cruise Line, they actually had to use two ports to build the ship, and they had to hold the two parts of the ship together when they were building the ship.
That's right. She's correct. The ship was separated in half.
Do you know where they did that at? Do you remember what country they built it at?
No, but I do know where they actually recorded the music for Animator's Palette in London.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, recorded and arranged.
Oh, wow. I think
Animator's Palette is one of the restaurants on all of the cruise ships.
I think they made the ships in Italy. Does that sound familiar?
That's accurate, Daddy.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Well, is there more history you want to share?
Yes. The Animator's Palette, they actually, like, there's music cues for the servers to tell. It tells the servers when to serve the meal's courses. Like when you're having your appetizer, it's like kind of white, the white wall. But then when you're like done for the appetizer, waiting for your main course, like the color really starts to show, and the music actually gets lower. And on the Magic, it's my favorite part of the Animator's Palette. That's my favorite ship that has the Animator's Palette.
You like that Animator's, like, because the Dream and the Fantasy have kind of a newer Animator's Palette with TV screens. You like the Animator's Palette that's old school, that their shirts change colors, and then the walls change colors and all of that stuff.
Let me tell.
Stick to the microphone, please.
There's a couple nights. Different nights about on Animator's Palette. Like, there's where I already talked about the night that they do the color show, and the servers, it's all white and black when you first enter, then it changes color.
Is there a surprise visitor one night in Animator's Palette only on the Disney Magic? Who is he?
Sorcerer Mickey.
And Sorcerer Mickey's nowhere else on Disney Cruise Line. Sorcerer Mickey only shows up at Animator's Palette.
That is
on the Disney Magic. Sorcerer Mickey is not on the Disney Dream or the Fantasy. I don't know if he's on the Wonder because we've never sailed the Wonder.
All right, we've got to ask another question here.
Here, we're talking restaurants.
Okay.
I have some more history about Castaway Cay. So the history about Castaway Cay is...
Kiddo, we're going to talk Castaway Cay later, okay?
Okay, I'll tell the history that I want to tell after.
Yeah, we're going to... we have to get through our outline here. Stick to the topic so we can get to Disney later, okay?
Okay.
All right, but we did talk about Animator's Palette, and this is on our list. Hold on, kiddo. Let me please speak. Animator's Palette... Disney has what's known as rotational dining. So the restaurants that we can find on the cruise ships are, babe.
You've got Animator's Palette. You've got
Animator's Palette's on all four ships.
All four ships. You've got a Royal Table.
It's a French restaurant on all four ships. It's called Lumiere's on the Magic, Royal Court on the Dream or Fantasy, and then Royal Palace, and then I don't know what it's called on the Wonder, but it's the same.
And who's in there mostly? Is it Belle and the Beast in that?
Well,
or is it Cinderella?
There's no characters of Royal Court, but I'll get to the part where there is characters later in my little in my corner that we do on the podcast, because there's a part that I'm going to, something that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll save that for
then. So then there's a third restaurant. There are three restaurants on for all the general public on all Disney Cruise Line ships. And the third one changes based on what ship you're on. So on the Magic, it's Rapunzel's Royal Table. Yeah. On the Wonder, it's Tiana's Place. And the Dream and the Fantasy, what is this? Oh, it's Enchanted Garden.
Which we never eat. But it's nice, though. It's
beautiful. It looks great. But it's on deck, too. I don't like to eat on deck, too. You can feel the motion a little more on deck, too. And
that's
just
where the crew's at. It's on deck, too. All right. So a tip there. All right. So 5:40. There's two dining times, 5:45 and 8:30 usually, right?
Somewhere in that ballpark. So and the earlier one is main dining.
And counter to that is, so if you're dining, there's a show going on, the main show. So there's a B show or Rapunzel show, other entertainment, like the big program for the night. And then you get out of dinner and then it airs again. So there's two showings. And so you run counter to that. I think is one of the key decisions people need to make for their families is,
are you early diners or late diners?
Because,
and for instance, when Ella was younger, we would be later diners because she would be sleeping at the 5:45 slot. Like that was her last nap of the day. So we would be later diners.
And now we look at it. Are we early?
We're early diners now.
We're early because we want to get done and then go play.
Yes, except for when we're in Europe. In Europe, we are late diners because you're in port oftentimes still.
Right.
You often don't get back from port until 5:30 or 6 o'clock when you're in Europe. So we are late diners in Europe.
And you can also, that's something like when you get on the ship, you can change your dining around. Hopefully you can there. They don't advertise it, but there's a little maneuvering where you can go and get your seating arrangements changed.
There is.
And then also, it's important. Do we have it here on Paolo and Remy?
No, we're talking restaurants right now, so okay. We can talk restaurants.
So there are also, and this is really one of the big highlights, is on all of the ships, there is Paolo, which is a high-end Italian restaurant.
It's 18 and up only.
And you can add on that restaurant. I think it's like $15 or $20
a person. It's $40 a person.
Is it now? Okay.
Yes, it was $25 a person when we first started cruising. It's now $40 a person.
You can sub
without the wine pairing.
You can sub out one of your rotations and go there for adults.
For an additional cost.
And then Remy is
the French restaurants.
And it's only on the Dream and the Fantasy. And it is a legitimate Michelin 3-star restaurant.
$75 a person.
And it is in Michelle and I's top five meals.
Often say it's our top meal ever.
It is genuinely, this isn't like, oh, it's great for cruising or it's great for Disney. It is, if this restaurant was set in France, and the chef is a Michelin 3-star.
Well, there's a French chef that's Michelin 3-star, and then there's an American chef that also is a Michelin star.
I don't remember that.
And you pick the American menu or the French menu if you're doing the tasting menus. And oddly, I always end up picking the French. You always end up picking the American. Or you can go a la carte and just bounce around and eat all over what you want. And it's just an incredible experience. The service is second to none. So
incredible wine. If I could, that's one of the points of friction for us is we can't get Ella to let us have that dinner on Paolo on Remy.
We are getting a Remy night in our December cruise, though.
And Remy is it is the best meal. Absolutely, you should opt out and get that.
And so just one last thing about rotational dining.
Sure.
You pick your dining time when you book your cruise, and then you are assigned a dining rotation. You'll be told what restaurant you start at, and then you will go, you'll rotate through each restaurant each night, and your servers will rotate with you. It's Disney Cruise Line's the only cruise in the business that does this. Your servers stay with you.
We're definitely going to do a second edition because I'm thinking there's going to be questions about tipping too, because that's it.
Yeah, that's a deeper dive.
Deeper dive. You know, but as we're doing this, like Erin had asked us because, you know, she's asking how old is the right age for Disney cruising? Because it changed since we started, because we went with Ella was at
4 months old was her first cruise.
But that's not the rules anymore.
Now it used to be you could only be 4 months old. Now you have to be 6 months old before you can cruise. But Erin wanted to know what age is the best to start the Disney cruising and the love. And she's heard that it's best for everyone to be potty trained. I think that there's no best age to start. I think that it depends on every family. It depends on what is important to you. If you have a baby, the Disney nursery is great. They will take good care of your children under the age of three. There is an hourly fee now for the nursery on the ships. I think it's $10 an hour. You go ahead and you pre-book your nursery times, and it's advised to pre-book your nursery times pretty as early as you can. And when you get on the ship, you'll have some flexibility to make sure that you can add some other times as needed. And if there's any problems with your child, they'll call you. Disney has what's called wave phones. So they're basically the old Nokia cell phones that you communicate with on ship without any problems. And so they'll call you to come back to the nursery if you need them. But if you're looking for the kids club experience, a child has to be 3 years old and potty trained to go in the kids club. So if that's an important for you, if you want your kids to be old enough to go in the kids club and not have to rely on the nursery, and the kids clubs are free, then 3 years old would be a good minimum age, and your kids have to be potty trained to go in the kids club. A lot of people think that you should wait till your kids are potty trained to Disney Cruise because you're not allowed to swim in the pools in a swim diaper, and you must wear a swim diaper, of course, if you're not potty trained, because you could end up shutting down the pools for the whole ship if you have
code brown. Code brown. Yeah.
But
you've never had a code brown, have
we
you?
We actually have never experienced that problem because there's splash pads, right, Ella? Aren't there cool splash pads that you don't have to be potty trained for? This is where Ella used to go when she was little. What are the splash pads like?
They're really fun. Like on the Dream, there's like Nemo. There's like a Nemo coral reef, and it's super fun. There's like a little water slide. And on the Magic, there's Donald's three nephews. If you've ever seen something like a holiday movie, because then you'll kind of see Mickey's nephews and Donald's nephews.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that splash pad's really cool. Like, the water dunks on you. And what about the Fantasy? The splash pad on the Fantasy is amazing, right? It's in the back kind of by Goofy Golf. It's huge. It's probably my favorite splash pad in all the ships. And all of those are family-friendly, and you don't have to be potty-trained to use. You just have to wear a swim diaper. So I really think it's just kind of a personal family choice when you start cruising.
I think looking at it from the, and this is so paternalistic, but so you're taking your family on vacation, and where do you take them? And it's like, listen, you're not going to New York. You're not going to New Orleans. That part of that period in your life is on hold for a little bit. And so you're looking for vacations where you want to feel safe. And so that is still my number one reason for Disney cruising is
right.
How safe I feel. There's no pickpocket coming by while you're, and I'm not trying to, I get it. The world sanitized. I don't want to see a sanitized world, all that stuff. I get that. Listen, Ella Joyce's had, she's had sat outside at wine bars with us in Barcelona and Paris. We're not exposing her to that, but there's just none of that danger, especially nowadays. Where it's
you
just
get
like,
to enjoy the movie theater without worrying about anything.
You can have a couple of cocktails and you're not driving anywhere. I mean, that's the other.
And I always said for me, Disney Cruise was great because it was the most relaxing vacation for me. I didn't have to pack up a diaper bag to go anywhere. You know, your stateroom is just a few steps away. So we could go to dinner and maybe I would just bring a pack of diaper wipes and she would be fine. And Disney Cruise Line, if your child is not eating solids yet, they're eating purees, they will puree anything for you on the spot.
What do they do? Oh, I want to ask Ella Joyce a restaurant question really quick. Ella, so you usually get French fries, broccoli, and
whatever.
And carrots. What does the waiter do with the ketchup bottle that's really cool every time?
You have a choice of Mickey or Minnie ketchup.
And they make it in the shapes?
A Mickey and Minnie.
That's so cool. I've never seen the Minnie because you always ask for who?
Mickey.
Yeah. But I will say, so like you don't need car seats. If you want to go to the show, normally if I was going to dinner with my family or I wanted to take Ella to an art class as a baby, I would have to lug a big car seat. And there's just none of that. So I found it a great vacation with a baby, with a toddler, with a new walker. We took her on when she was 13 months old and she was a new walker. And while it was probably our hardest cruise, it was a safe place for her to toddle around and us not to be worried.
I'll give you 2 points to that. Number one, get your mind away from the idea that this is Disney World, which we love Disney and we'll be there. Disney World is overrun. I mean, Disney World is you're playing, you know, you're basically trying not to get run over by a motorized vehicle or the tourists from, you know, other parts of the world who seemingly do not have the same sense of personal space that we do. That is not the case here. You are in a very hospitable environment where the kids can literally crawl around and they're everyone's first priority.
What is the baby race that they have? Do you remember that? The contest with the babies on the cruise ship? You have to talk in the microphone.
Like they do in the... when you enter the cruise ship, like there's the lobby. In the lobby, they do like sometimes on the cruise, they do a baby Jack Jack race.
Yeah, it's called Jack Jack's Diaper Rash.
That's right. I remember that.
To see which baby can crawl across the finish line the quickest. They cannot be walking yet. Ella, do you know that you did Jack Jack's Diaper Dash once?
What?
Talk in the microphone.
I think you moved in a... Did you move in a circle?
She didn't move at all.
Oh, she didn't? Okay.
She just sat there. On the practice run, she was the fastest. And she, like, raced right across the finish line to you. But...
I won the practice run?
Yes.
Sure. But, wow. And then the winning baby gets a cute Disney Cruise Line bib. So it's a fun thing to do. So like I said, it's really a personal family choice. I think there's great programming for all ages.
And I think that, I guess the second part, I would say... You know, getting like separated from like the typical Disney World kind of overrun experience is if you've stayed in Disney hotels, which are good and they are what they are, that's not what this is. This is much more, these are really nice. This is really first class relative.
You know, they provide diaper genies. If you can request a diaper genie in your stateroom. So if you have children in diapers, it's not a problem. And they clean that diaper genie out for you.
Twice a day.
So right. It's a great, glorious gift. They have bed rails that you can request for the beds. They have pack and plays for babies
to
sleep
in. They're
completely prepared, completely baby friendly. So,
and you can pre-order stuff right on.
That company no longer exists.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay. All right.
Yeah, we used to, but you can still ship diapers and everything. You can ship one box on board ahead of time, which is what we used to do. I used to ship diapers and formula on board before, so I didn't have to pack it in my suitcases.
And all right, so like, I know this goes kind of without saying, but I know a lot of our friends like to cruise and they're like, well, why would we do a Disney cruise that's more expensive? If you are doing a Disney cruise versus any of the other ones, you have other people on those cruise lines that don't have the same priorities that you do. Half the people are on there to...
There's a casino on the other ones. There's no casino on Disney there cruise is no, ships, that, so that, it is a family-friendly ship.
There is no casino. That's a huge... point for a lot of people. It's all families. And yes, that's what you'd expect on a Disney cruise. But I know that a lot of people don't realize that. And so it's like, you just have this good, wholesome feeling that throughout the thing. So again, I go back to the safe thing. I don't know. I just feel like as soon as the baby turns the right age, it's just such a great vacation.
It's such a great vacation. Aaron wants to know, is there a best time of year you recommend going? Lighter crowds, perhaps? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Ella, let me ask you this. Are there times when they do special, like, holiday? Yes. They do? All right, so they do some special holiday. Yes.
I recommend the Christmas cruise because it is the best cruise. Santa comes.
What else is there fun? Is there a giant gingerbread house?
Yes.
And do you get to make gingerbread houses on the ship?
Yeah, and you get... No, you get to make gingerbread men.
Well, no, you have never made gingerbread men on a ship. You saw that on someone's video on YouTube.
Yeah.
You have gotten to make gingerbread houses on the Disney cruise ship.
Oh, yeah,
at Christmas
now
time.
I remember.
There is definitely a better time to go and a lighter time to go. I think you have to think about it like, when is New York, Chicago, Buffalo, Philadelphia going to cruise? And that's like...
Yeah, when are they out of school? And those are always busy.
And when are they not going? Like, they are starting school, I think, a great time to go. And it's a little tough for us, but we've been in school maybe for a month right after Labor Day. Because
it's always a great time because they had just gone back to school. So they are not cruising. So the ships are lighter.
And so that's a great time.
We also always find that September 11th is an excellent date to cruise because a lot of Americans still just have a block on traveling on that day. And it also is in hurricane season. So the cruise is cheaper.
I think that you will see that there is a great deal of vagary in the pricing on when you can cruise. Like it will be, you really have to go through, and thank goodness for Leslie Cohen and her travel agency, because there is 1 week a cruise, 1 week in February, a cruise will be X amount of dollars. A week later, it will be three times X, and it will be because the demand has gone up so much, like because the New York City school system has gotten out for spring break, or
spring break is always the most expensive time. Spring break and summer are always the most expensive time of year to cruise. And then the Christmas cruises are very expensive compared to the other cruises. Itineraries change the price points. If there's a double dip at Castaway Cay, which means the ship docks at Castaway Cay two times over the course of the cruise, that's a much more expensive cruise because it's a very desirable cruise. So there's all sorts of factors that go into the pricing. The best price you're ever going to get on a cruise is if you book your cruise when the an opening day of the release of the itineraries, which is about a year and a half in advance.
And I think that you can, you're exactly right. I think that you you can find a lot of value. You will see a 3 or a 4 day open up because external situations have changed, and it'll just be people will, like we just found a cruise, the last one we went on, something had opened up with only a couple weeks left to go, and so we upgraded. It's important to note, there are different levels to this cruising. There is, you know, for those who have followed us on Facebook, you know, we sail concierge. It's expensive.
We haven't always sailed concierge, but
we
did though.
Not. I was just going to say, we have not always. Yeah. And I think it's important for anybody that is starting to cruise that you should absolutely start on... what is it? Just a veranda stateroom? Is that what would you?
Well, you don't even have to. We've only ever done a veranda state. It's a deluxe family stateroom with veranda, which is a great room. They have split bathrooms, so the shower and bathtub are in one bathroom with the sink, and the toilet. There's another half bath with a toilet and a sink. So if someone is in the shower, someone else can be in the other bathroom. So that is what's not. That's a nice thing about the family staterooms with the veranda. But if you have an interior stateroom, Disney has the magic portholes, which have characters, right? You can talk into the microphone, Ella.
So there's two different characters that you might see if you look very closely on your magic porthole. It's Peach the Starfish.
Peach the Starfish.
From Finding Nemo, or Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, which is really cool. Disney Cruise Line's the only ship with these magic portholes. So that's kind of really neat. So some people, and there are some different, and you can also look at the ships. There's some different layouts. One time we had my dad in an internal sideways room. And yeah. So a sideways room makes it feel like it's bigger, because normally when you walk into a cruise stateroom, it's just straight back. It's narrow. So the sideways room, as it sounds, is a wide room. It's not deep, and but it's spread out.
I know it sounds easy, or again, sounds obvious. It's why I would recommend
using a travel agent.
Because
they know what rooms there's.
We've had a situation where we had an impacted view.
Yes.
And
it was because Disney mislabeled it.
Yeah, Disney mislabeled it. And we had, so Disney Cruising is known for offering the largest verandas on average for its...
The largest amount of staterooms with verandas on average, yes.
And so it is... Listen, there's nothing better. One of the best moments that Michelle's ever had was... Or that we both had was when Michelle sat outside in the sunrise and fed Ella Joyce when she was a baby. And we didn't leave the room as much then. We were just young pups at that time.
And we were tied to her nap schedule, and we were tired. I mean, she was 4 months old, but it was glorious.
It was glorious.
That morning bottle as we watched the sunrise was still probably my favorite cruise memory ever, which is crazy because we've had so many incredible cruise memories.
Mine is the Bloody Mary at Keys restaurant, but that's for another.
There, it's different.
And so I think that if you look around, you will see that there's a lot of variety in this pricing. And so you've really got to be diligent.
Also takes us to another question of Erin. She wanted to know if it's best to do a short cruise or to jump into a 7 day cruise or a longer cruise.
That's a good question.
And that really, I think you need to decide your itinerary first, and budget will dictate. I am not a big fan of the 3 night cruise. I think it's too short and you don't have a day at sea, right, Ella? You can talk in the microphone.
Yeah, that I think so too. You don't get that day at sea, right?
Right. But when you're taking the longer cruises, you should get like a bigger stateroom, like concierge kind of.
Yeah, I agree. Why do you think that?
Because you need more stuff. You need like more clothes. You need more costumes. You need more shoes. You need more toys.
You are definitely your father's daughter today. With how many?
And
how
on the Magic and the Wonder, a lot of the concierge staterooms have walk-in closets. Not all of them do. So again, that's something that it's good to have a travel agent who knows the layouts of the ships. Because walk-in closets do come in handy.
I think the perfect first cruise is that 4-day.
Yeah, a 4-night cruise is a perfect first cruise. You still get a day at sea. It's not overwhelming. You don't have to stress so much about what you pack.
You still get Nassau.
You still get what?
Castaway Key.
And Castaway Key is always our favorite day, right?
Right.
That's Disney's private island. It is the most beautiful blue waters you'll see. It is secluded from the rest of the kind of the world. It's not there's nothing in any direction. Lots of family activities. You can do everything from snorkeling to I don't know, all the crazy things that you don't let me do. Glass bottom boat riding. The snorkeling's amazing there.
Listen,
actually,
I booked a glass bottom boat ride once, and we walked up to it, and you said, "No way, I'm not doing this. It's too crowded."
It was too crowded.
We're not very.
But it's just.
We are not people to talk to about excursions, probably because we always book private. It's not
pristine beach sand, and there's family dance parties there. There's characters and their beach gear. It is invariably our favorite day. Great beach experience, even for people that live near the beach and live on the water. It's just this great, very safe, very enjoyable. And don't ask about cabanas. We're not going to tell you about cabanas now because
you're not, if you haven't been on a cruise before, you have no hope of getting a cabana.
And I think
so
it's like this,
go with that.
I think it's this thing in the distance. It's a mirage, but, you know, like until you've been on a Disney cruise five or six times.
But if you've been on a Disney cruise before, I recommend a cabana because it's better. I think because it's less crowded.
It is less crowded.
It is less crowded. You're not wrong.
And a golf cart.
Ella, the golf cart's actually not always a part of the cabana experience. We might just
ask for that.
Yeah.
But you're right. If somebody can get a cabana.
If you can get a cabana, get a cabana.
It is worth it. But you're just, if you're a new cruiser.
That's not cruising concierge, you have no hope.
Don't worry about it.
Because there's only 21.
So I think the 4-day is the best.
And on a 4-day, you don't even realize that you're missing anything. Like, it's a great vacation. It's relaxing. And I think you get to experience it all. And when you get comfortable, then you can bump up to a 7-day.
It's what we did. A veranda stateroom, 4-day, you know, basically in March or September.
We did that for 3 cruises, and then we did our first 7-day.
And we had an incredible time.
Yep.
And I wish, for my budget-wise, we could go back to it because... When we had, they had that Florida resident discount.
They still do Florida resident discounts. That's another good advice.
I think it was $1,600 or something like
that. It was $1,600 for our first cruise.
You can't live, I mean, you can't go to a hotel and like you can definitely not go to a Disney cruise or a Disney hotel for 4 days and
4 nights.
Maybe.
And that's another
top
tip.
All-star.
If you can travel quickly, there are often Florida resident discounts and they are not available for concierge rooms.
All right, so that is going to be the first half of our Disney cruise tutorial because we are going to get going to our first Disney trip. We've got a lot more questions that people want to ask, and it's just like we're going to spread this out so that we don't lose all of our audience on the second half of our...
And so before we close out, we're going to introduce you to Ella's Corner real quick. She has a couple of quick
things she wants
to hit about Disney cruises.
Basically some hot takes about Disney cruising.
And yeah, that's going to replace our hot take section this, I think.
I want your hot take.
Okay. All right, so welcome to Ella's Corner. Ella, get close to the microphone and tell our friends what you want to tell them about the 3 things we talked about. Stop on the microphone. We are live.
So, the Bippity Boppity Boutique, you need like princess outfits or like fancy clothes.
What is the Bippity Bop Boutique? Can you tell the audience what it is like?
What do you do? What happens there?
Like, you just go there and you have like your hair down if you're a girl. You have nothing on you.
You have clothes on.
Yes. All you have is clothes. And then when you're done, you're totally transformed.
Because a fairy godmother in training does your hair and makeup and nails.
Yeah.
And so you can either come with your own Disney princess. Oh, and they put pixie dust in your hair, which is like glitter. So you can either buy Disney princess dresses there and tiaras and shoes.
Yes.
Or you can come wearing your own Disney princess dress, right?
Right.
We often just bring our own now, right? Because we own so many of them. There's no need to buy another one.
Right.
You're not talking in the microphone.
Right.
Okay.
And who do you get to dress up as in the Bippity Bop? Who's the one that you like to get dressed up?
Rapunzel.
You and boys can go too, right? They can they can dress up like
knights.
Okay, so
and on Pirate Night they turn it into the Pirates League, right? And you can get made up like a pirate.
Right, but I don't go on the Pirate Night because...
You're not really into pirates?
No.
Do you have to make reservations for the Bippity Boppity Boutique ahead of time?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's really popular. What is a special event that you have to book ahead of time that we always go to the Bippity Boppity Boutique to prepare for it first?
Royal Court Royal Tea.
Royal Court Royal Tea. And what happens at the Royal Court Royal Tea? It's very special.
And now this is what I told you earlier on the podcast that I was going to talk about. You have to make reservations, and it's usually on a sea day or in port. But during your port, if you don't want to go to port and it's on a port day, I recommend doing it.
And it's a tea party that you and mom always go to. Some dads go too. Everybody gets dressed up for fancy tea. And when you get there, you're greeted by Lady Chamomile and you're introduced to the court as a princess of the Disney magic or dream or fantasy or wonder. And what is sitting at your table when you get there? What presents has Cinderella left for you?
She has left us an autograph book, a music box with a necklace that has some charms on it, and a bracelet.
And a Cinderella doll that you can, it's like an American Girl doll version of a Cinderella doll that is not sold anywhere. You can only get it if you go to the tea party.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Pretty good.
And do they crown you when you walk in?
Yeah.
And then what special guests come to the tea party?
Belle, Cinderella, and Tiana. But my fairy godmother told me that Rapunzel might come instead of Belle, but it never happened.
Yeah, I think that fairy godmother was mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always Belle, Tiana, and Cinderella.
Yes, but maybe we just haven't been to a tea party that has a Rapunzel.
Maybe, that's true. And so you get all the princesses come to your table. They all sing. There's a great show. Yeah. It's a traditional high tea for the parents and
apple juice
for the kids and fun treats. It is mine and Ella. Ella and I look forward to it every cruise. It's a great mommy daughter time.
Yum.
What is another event that we do on the first day of the cruise? It's your favorite thing.
I still have more stuff.
Talk in the microphone.
I still have more stuff to talk about at Royal Court Royal Tea.
What else do you have to say about Royal Court Royal Tea?
Like on the first day, into the cruise before the Royal Court Royal Tea, there's an invite telling you, and you have to call to tell the concierge or to tell the person that makes the cupcakes which princess you want. It's either Cinderella, Tiana, Belle, or Rapunzel.
Yes, because at the end, you get a special surprise princess cupcake that's your same as your favorite princess.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
And there's marshmallow. And there's white marshmallows dipped in chocolate, covered in Mickey sprinkles that might be out at the concierge lounge, but it's definitely at Royal Court Royal.
God, wow.
Yeah, that's right. Now, what, before we wrap up Ella's Corner, what is the event on the first day of the cruise that's your favorite thing that we can never miss?
The sail away party.
And why is the sail away party so much fun? It's Daddy's favorite too.
You see the main characters, Mickey, Pluto, Minnie, Donald, Daisy, Goofy, Chip and Dale, and the crew members.
It's this incredible way to get the party started. It is the whole team. It's on the deck 11, which is the outdoor deck. It's just such a great sell. You finally have made it. You've got your luggage in. You're done with the that's the worst part.
Yes, let me talk about it.
I don't even want the bad memories of it.
We're short on time if we want to get to Disney, kiddo. But the sail away party is a huge fun party. There's singing, there's dancing, there's streamers.
I've got some friends texting me right now. They want to know, can you appear on the next episode again and do another Ella's Corner on some more of this? You can? All right, good. All right, we're going to have you then. Hey, thanks a lot for, you want to say goodbye from Ella's Corner?
Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ella, for joining us.
I've seen more words.
Go ahead.
I love cake and Disney cruises.
You do, kiddo. You do.
All right. So this important housekeeping note, because you brought it up, and I know what's probably going on here. So our five-star average has dipped down a little bit, and I imagine that's because there's a few assholes out there that are just, like, messing with me and giving it a one star just to drag it down.
Or it's Trump people who really don't like when I say bad stuff about Trump.
No, I think it's more the assholes. And so, those people could be overlapped.
It could be both.
We could use some five-star reviews. I'm going to reach out to some folks. If you do a five-star review and you grab it, screen grab it and send it to me, you're going to get all sorts of sunburn shout-outs and other things. I think I'm going to do an advertising raffle at some point. But if we could get some
five-star reviews, but five-star reviews with written reviews are even better.
It would be amazing.
We really appreciate it. It helps us out. So, and also, as always, please engage on the Facebook page. We welcome suggestions for guests.
That's got really busy. It has.
Chevron Jones was commenting on something the other day. So I just, you know, we really appreciate the feedback there. And we always welcome advice and input on what we should talk about, who we should have on the show. And if you want us to talk about something other than Democratic candidates for president of the United States, tell us what you want us to talk about and we'll do it.
All right. Speaking of Democratic presidential candidates, you have a hot take you want to share with our favorite with our audience today?
Well, I mean, so we didn't talk about a really important person from the debate when we did our debate overview. You know, it's a woman. She is...
Klobuchar.
She was by far the star of the debate. She Gillibrand? May not have been the winner, but she was the star. It was my girl, Marianne Williamson.
Oh my God.
Honey, I mean, she's my spirit animal. She's going to defeat Donald Trump with love. She's going to, sir, you only fight with hate. And I believe love is the most powerful force of all. And I will meet you on that battlefield and love will win. She's so crazy. She doesn't allow anything negative. And that's kind of my life philosophy. I don't like to let anything negative into my headspace. So Marianne Williamson, she's my girl.
It's disappointing. Number one, it's disappointing that she's on the stage and Steve Bullock is not. But now what I see.
But we would have missed all of those incredible moments.
Now the thing that really is alarming me is that Republicans are donating to her in the small dollar amount so that she can meet the threshold. So she's on the second stage. And every minute that is...
Oh my God, I'm going to do that too, because that would be amazing. She's so much fun on the debate stage, babe. It was the best part of the debate. It was, in all of the darkness and all of the heaviness of politics, she was just a bright light. And I mean, if she invited me to join her cult tomorrow, I might.
Oh my God. I'm
secretly afraid she's a cult leader.
She is a cult leader. This is my hot take for the week, and it's another. Speaking of Trump fanatics, so Matt Gaetz is probably one of the more controversial people in national politics at this point. We've had him on; he is a friend. We disagree with him on a lot of stuff, including his devout support of the president. But that does not excuse some of the things that have been done towards him. And so, you know, he was milkshaked a month ago by a person who had ran against him. And I see now that they're filling up that Antifa is filling up the milkshakes with quick dry cement. And so those have become even more dangerous. But there was an activist, and I'm going to leave out their name because they're a friend of the podcast. And they're otherwise they're good people, but they were saying that they wish the milkshake had been filled up with urine. Listen, Matt Gaetz says and does a lot of stuff that I disagree with, but you can't get down to the other people's level. And it's not Matt Gaetz's level because he's not advocating violence for this. We can't milkshake people. We can't suggest that urine be thrown at people. We can't do these things. If you don't want the politics to become a version of The Handmaid's Tale, you also don't want it to become this Antifa-driven kind of anarchy side, because that is only used by the lunatics on the far right as proof that the media is not covering things, that the media is biased, etc. So please put down the bag filled with urine. Put down the milkshake with quick dry cement in it. If you want to argue with Matt Gaetz, argue with him on Twitter every day. You have every right, but keep the don't, you know, veer into the physical violence
threat. I mean, here's what I want to say. This is just probably a good life rule. But we can use it for, this should be a rule for political discourse. If a behavior would get you put in timeout at preschool, you shouldn't implement it to prove your political point.
So thank you very much for indulging us as we got to talk Disney Cruise. We are, like we said, headed out next week on ours.
Barcelona.
Barcelona first. We will have we may bring the podcast equipment with us. We may do some taping from La Boqueria or from the decks of the Disney Dream. Or as Michelle said, we may not. We don't know if we're going to be able to upload. We will have another podcast in the can with some interviews of some friends and talk more about Disney cruising. But thank you very much, and we hope your summer stays hot.
And I'll be talking more in the next podcast.
All right. Thank you, guys.